here, so just make sure that you're okay that way. All right, and stay on your mics. Rick, is that kind of a strain there to get over to that little?
No.
Okay.
I think if she's going to do that, we should have her on here.
All right.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaub.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Hi there, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. This week's episode is the care and feeding of people with money to give your theater. Or where's the money coming from? Okay, so and we are very lucky again to be, well, there's several things we're lucky about. This is our 27th episode. We are once again at the Daily Grind in Elkhart, Indiana, which is at 113 East Lexington Avenue, in case you happen to be in town. They have the best coffee and nosh on the planet. It's a great place, and they've given us the room for free today to do the podcast.
Yay.
And so those of you who are left here, please make sure. This is our third episode here on really pretty much our anniversary celebration. Theater Geeks has been on the pod for a year.
We're in our second year.
We're in our second year now. That's right. Boy, that happened quick. Anyway, we are also lucky to have with us Rick Ellis, a colleague from the faraway city of South Bend. And he came over here and is joining us again today. Rick was with us with a couple of episodes a while back, and also the two episodes here at the Grind.
And the
numbers went up. Yeah. Funny thing about that. We also have with us today Kristen Swerhaas Scott, who is a professional in her professional life has been involved with a number of not-for-profit arts groups and has a lot of interesting things to talk about with relationship to building not only audience but also building revenue from that audience beyond just selling tickets. And so welcome, Kristen. We're glad
to have you
with us. This is a down economy right now. So in most communities and even in big cities, there's always going to be money is always an issue for arts organizations.
Always.
But more so in this kind of an economy, what's sort of the first line of that you combat that, and how do you work with donors who maybe can't dig as deep as they used to be able to dig?
Do you know what they call this?
What?
They call this development. They call it development for a reason. You have to develop those people. You have to develop new people and keep your old ones. So the economy is bad, and it's been a really tough place for not-for-profits, not just in this community, but it's really bad here, but all over the United States.
Yeah.
And if you read, the trade journals, they'll tell you that everybody's having problems. So what do? You expand your base. You, in the previous two podcasts, you talked about shows. So you give them shows that the audience will like. It's much easier to sell to your sponsors. Most people do not have a list of sponsors that will just do anything, that will just sponsor any concert or performance or event. They want to have something that appeals to them. So you have this portfolio. The Indiana School of Philanthropy talked about having a portfolio when you went out to a sponsor. You have a portfolio. It doesn't have to be on paper. It can be in your head of what you are going to offer to them. If you know that they had kids that were in band or orchestra, but you are now a community theater, you know what? Music band is probably something they would like to sponsor because it highlights bands. So try and find out what they like. Try and find out where their background has been and offer them something. It is much easier if you consistently offer something good. So, Rick, you were talking about you have people, including yourself, who give without knowing what's on the season, and that's great.
Yeah, the idea is just to support the theater,
right?
Whatever they are choosing. Yeah.
But if you're trying to cultivate new people, you need to show them, one, that you are consistently good, and those awards always help. But if you're trying to cultivate new ones, find out what they're interested in. Find out, by calling other people who might know them or doing your homework. And when I say you, it doesn't have to be your staff person. In fact, a lot of times this should be done by board members. They should be finding out who these people are and what the connections are. That's what a board is for. It's to, the second function of a board is to find the funds to make this available. So So you're finding out who they are. You're finding out what they're interested in. You're offering them consistently good things. And then when you had called me, you called this the care and feeding of donors. And that's really important. And I wrote it down as recruiting support, thank you, and recognition, because that's what you're doing. You're thanking them. Very few people are altruistic where they're going to give money just because they want to give money. They want to give money for a reason, mm-hmm. either because they were involved with it as a kid, their kids were involved in school, some reason they want to, or they're with a company and they want to see their company's name in lights. You know, they want to see their company's name in your playbill, on your brochure, on the tickets, on the marquee.
They want to be part of the history and culture of the theater in some way.
Absolutely.
It's kind of, yeah.
So you need to thank them, and you need to thank them profusely.
And publicly.
And publicly. Yeah. It has to be on everything. One time in one of my organizations, I've worked with three, and it's been about 14 years total of working with three different not-for-profits. And one time I took and had pencils made up for the season, and I put a different event on a pencil and the sponsor, and then I gave each sponsor 300 pencils. It was a small marketing cost, but it was great. It lasted all year. In fact, I'm still finding those pencils, and it's been 10 years. But, you know, you give them to the sponsor, and they give them out to their clients. So if your sponsor is a bank or a real estate office, guess what? They're giving it out all. It was just a little piece of marketing, but their name was on it, and they loved to see it. They love to see their name on anything.
Yeah. What do we got here? We got a question in the chat.
We have a couple of questions. The first question is, most people think that ticket sales make up 100% of the theater budget. So how do you sort of
educate?
Do away with that sort of...
disabuse people. Okay, the question
without,
is, for those of you...
Without, like, overdoing that message.
How do you convince your audience of potential donors that ticket sales do not cover the entire cost of your operations, and do it in a way that doesn't, like, get obnoxious, I guess, is kind of the question,
the
right?
The best one that I know of is Chicago Lyric. 40% of their ticket sales, or of their budget, was supplied by ticket sales. And I'm not sure that's current today, but that was a few years ago. Most people, it's only 20 to 25% of your budget is provided by tickets, and I see nothing wrong with telling them that. Put it in your program. Put it in your playbill when you're asking. You should always have a piece that you leave with individuals, companies, sponsors, whoever. You should always leave something. And just make it a one line in there. Ticket sales comprise 20% of our budget. The rest comes from sponsors.
Yeah, I've seen it in programs before where it's there's generally a quarter page somewhere that is also allows you to make a donation. Because right. It only makes up giving them that message at that time. And by the way, if you want to make a donation.
Right. Yeah. Oh, it's really important to ask donations. When I was at the fundraising school and took a class down there, the number one fundraising organization in the United States is churches. They command 70% of all giving is given to churches. And do you know why? Because they ask every single week.
There you go.
You need to ask people over and over and over, and
there,
you need to make it
easy. That's the answer, collection plate. Two words, collection plate.
I hadn't thought of that. That's great.
Wait a minute. Can I just say that, and I can't remember because my mind is going. I can't remember what group was talking about this. But evidently, there came a need for a new roof. And there was nothing in the budget that would pay for it. So, and this was like an arts organization. And so, every performance, they said to the audience, look, we have our budget, but this has come up, and it's an emergency. And there's a basket on your way out, if you wouldn't mind, if you got $1, $5, whatever you can give, we would really appreciate it because we need to get the fix so it's not going to rain on your heads. And they got enough money to fix the roof.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing
when there's a threat.
Okay, fine. Well, you see how many, if you go to some of the tours that come through, when they have the Equity Fights AIDS campaign and the actors stand at the doorway with the
camera. I've seen that.
Whoa, yeah. They have baskets full of fives and tens, and I'm not saying we would get that, but at least
we do raffles, right?
Yeah, right.
Drawings.
But that is, you have to coordinate that and do work and everything that. But a simple thing is to have in your playbill, in your season brochure, in every program you do, is some way, a little box that says, you know, I want to support the community theater in this way, and or have envelopes. That's another one. Just have envelopes. And I've seen envelopes that have a large flap that then tears off and sticks inside, and they're just readily available. You walk in and out of the theater, and right there they are. You walk in and out of a concert, and they're right there. The more you ask people, the more likely they are to give, but you do need to educate them. And you had another question, didn't you?
Sorry.
This question actually got answered in the chat room, but I'll just throw it out there. For the three or more, is there a fundraising requirement for the ECT board?
For our board?
You know, yes. Do they have to bring in, minimum in outside corporate donations?
From what I understand, most nonprofit boards have a fundraising requirement.
Yeah. Most
ours,
do.
Ours does not.
Should.
Yeah, it should. It should.
The reason you do that is because the first role, first function of a board is to hire competent people to carry out its mission, and the second function of a board is to find those funds to make that mission a reality. So that's the function of a board. All the other stuff is just, you know, additional reasoning.
Getting back to the issue of the economy itself, is it simply a matter of asking more, or do you restructure the way you ask depending on the economy?
I think it's both, Dave. I think you ask more. But I think if you're not utilizing your board, wherever you're at, and for whatever type of not-for-profit, if you're not utilizing your board to say, make a list of people you know, business owners, business people, vice presidents of banks, vice presidents of this, people in positions who can make that decision, they need to make a list and they need to start contacting them, whether or not you have a staff person that's doing development. But certainly if you're a small not-for-profit and you don't have a staff person who's dedicated to development, you definitely need to use your board. And they ask more often. More and more are also using special events, and I know you have some special events that you've done.
Right.
The local Red Cross had a garden party where it was jazz and wine tasting, and I don't know what they made, but they made a lot. Silent auctions are a big thing. Special events are lots of fun, so if your board members don't feel comfortable asking people, put them on a committee and do a special event and just have a fundraiser.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I had another question, but it's flown out of my head now.
But I was going to say, most boards I know do require their board members to gift. And the reason for that, again, is when you go to a major sponsor and you're asking for $2,000, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, you want to be able to say to them, because they're going to ask the question. The larger the dollar you're asking them, they're going to ask you how many of your board support the organization, whatever it is, the concert.
Support it financially.
Right? Oh,
yes.
Okay.
And you want to be able to say, I have 100%. 100% of my board supports
in some
even
way.
Even if that support is at $50?
If that support is at $50, absolutely.
So you don't lie about it.
Right.
One of the things a lot of organizations do, and maybe I'm getting, tell me if I'm getting away from the main issue here, but a lot of not-for-profits, especially performing arts groups, depend a lot on program advertising and things like that. I don't know if that's a major aspect of our theater, but I know it is for some groups. Is that something you should hang your hat on as fundraising?
You don't want to hang your hat, but you definitely want to do it. You can easily raise, in this community alone, $10,000 to $15,000 just by putting ads in a brochure.
Right. Yeah, and you may get people to support the theater who wouldn't support just by writing a check. If they feel like they're getting an ad, does that make a difference?
Well, it's a different budget. It's an advertising budget. Every business has an advertising budget, and you can honestly show them what they're getting for their value, or for the value they're getting for their money.
Yeah, here
because
it is.
If you're going to do, let's say, 6 main stage productions and 1 summer and 2 youth, that's 9 productions that you're going to hand that playbill out to. And so you say you're going to get 9 of these for your dollar. If you put this same ad in a newspaper or in a trade journal, how many people are going to see it for a whole year for $500? It's a totally different budget. It's a great way to get companies and individuals that might not normally support you. It's also a great way to cultivate them. Because let's say you get, if you're a theater and you get somebody to do a $500 ad and you give them four tickets for it. Well, they're getting something, but also now you have given them tickets to come and see your production. And so they're there, and maybe they'll come back and pay for it. Or maybe they'll decide to sponsor it. All of a sudden, they really like what they're seeing. So when you go to them and say, well, last year you put an ad in, and this year we're wondering if you'd like to help underwrite the children's theater. We know that you really liked that.
Right, yeah. And of course, if you give them four tickets and they don't come, they might give them to someone else.
Absolutely.
And that's audience building as well. It's not fundraising but at that point, but it's audience building for potentially for the future. Yeah, our board at our theater, of course, is more of a working board, and they tend to be more involved in, traditionally have been more involved in the productions and in the specifics of running the theater, and haven't had as much involvement in the fundraising.
And a working board is great. Cultivate new board members. I'm not saying get rid of your old ones, mm-hmm. but when you have natural attrition take place or when you're expanding, get people whose skill level is that they do special events or they do fundraising or they know how to handle development.
Does it go without saying that when you come to when you're an arts organization, theater or symphony orchestra or whatever, that you go to a potential sponsor, that providing good entertainment or good performing arts culture for the community really is synonymous with providing what the sponsor likes to the community? You know what I mean? Like, what does the sponsor have to like everything or most of it? Or obviously has to have an appreciation for what you're doing.
That's a very good term. They have to appreciate what you're doing. They don't have to necessarily like that particular format or that particular production, but they have to feel comfortable that whatever you're doing, you will do to the best of your ability, that you will do it with polish and class and sophistication,
right.
Whatever your mainstay is. If they see a comedy, maybe they don't like comedies. I know this is going to sound terrible, but I don't like Death of a Salesman. I think it's too depressing.
It
is depressing. And that's not what I go to the theater for. That doesn't mean I have to go for
it. You seen the musical?
No.
That's a different.
No, but on the other hand, I do like drama. Your particular organization did Defying Gravity, was that the name of it, a couple years ago? It was a great drama. So people don't have to necessarily like what they are sponsoring, but they have to like the genre. They have to like the organization. You have to be able to prove to them. And you know what? People like numbers. So if you can say, we've had an increase in our audience at such and such a level, or we've had an increase in our donations at such and such a level, that always helps.
Okay. Positive numbers.
We don't want negative ones.
We got a budget shortfall, and we need you to bail us out.
That's much easier to sell when you're on an upswing than when you're on a down.
So you stay positive. That's good.
But you know what? You can put a spin on anything. So get some writer to put a positive spin on stuff.
That's right.
But
don't lie.
No, I'm not saying you should lie.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's the point. You can turn things into a positive, but you really have to be honest with donors as well. I mean, you can't just.
And so then, after you have the donor, how do you keep them? That was another question that had come up. How do you keep that donor? And I've heard people say, "Well, I don't want to spend the money that they give me by throwing a party for them, because then I've just lost the money that they gave me." Well, you need to thank them in some way. Mm-hmm. And I'm really adamant that you need to thank your donors, not just with a letter, although that's a given. When they give you $2,000 or $500 or $50, they should get a thank you letter. But, if you're a community theater, have a night that's a donor night. Or have a performance that you're highlighting your donors. Have them sit in the special section. Something before the production. Put wine and cheese on, or if you don't want alcohol, put cider and cheese out there. And let them come and mingle. Let them meet the actors. If you're a concert, let them meet the artists. If you're a not-for-profit that specializes in visual arts, let them meet the graphic artist or the artist there.
Right.
It's amazing. I was involved with the music group, and I kept telling my musicians, you need to go out and meet these people. They want to know you. They think that people on stage are somebody different, and it's kind of like meeting a movie star. And so they want to meet them. So have a night when your actors, I know the actors go into the green room, well, have a night that they're specifically assigned to meet somebody new or to talk to somebody new.
Mm-hmm.
Just Little things like that. If you don't want to do that, you want to have a special night, have one of your board members open their home and invite your major sponsors. We did that one time and had all the board members bring something, so the cost was negligible. Okay. There's another question from the chat room, I think.
Yes.
So large houses, question is, large houses denote a theater's health and usually adds to audience enjoyment. So at what point do you fill a house with comps?
Paper.
What point do you fill a house
At what point do you fill a house with comp tickets?
In other words, when do you pay for the house?
If you start comping all the tickets to your patrons, donors, and sponsors, do you get into trouble because that's all that's coming to the theater? I kind of don't think so, but that's...
I don't think it's all that's coming, but I do think that a sponsor wants to see a full house, and to be perfectly honest, I've never had a sponsor ask me how many of them were sold tickets.
Yeah.
They just wanted to see people in the seats.
I think a lot of times they assume that on an opening night, possibly, you'd find more comps there than
more
you
VIPs
would.
Yeah, there right. than that's other times.
On regular night. Professional theaters, that's traditional.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
The night that you'll paper,
Right.
Opening night.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know they like to see full houses. We love to see full houses, but if they're not there, you can't go out and... You know, call your friends at 5 o'clock and say, "Oh, please come because we need bodies in the chairs."
Right.
And I do know South Bend Civic will sometimes do that, but also they give 4 box seats to every sponsor for opening.
And that's really good. You need to give those tickets to fill that opening night.
Yeah.
The other way you can do it is a win-win. Is to paper the house if you think you're going to not sell it out or you're concerned, is to find a youth organization, because that's really great. One of the things we didn't even get into was grants and foundation funding, but is to give tickets either at cost or at a severely reduced fee where you can get youth organizations to come in. It really helps when you're writing grants, because all of a sudden you now are the goody-two-shoes yourself, because you're giving away something that you have. But it fills your house. There's another question.
Would you rather have a small house with paid tickets or a full house with comps?
Depends on the show.
Depends on the ratio.
There's some shows,
comedy, definitely full.
You want a full house on a comedy for sure, yeah. And I think, this is really sort of a little bit away from the fundraising issue, but... A full house is always better than a small house.
Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, in general,
because it gives
different energy.
It gives different energy. Yeah. It gives the actors a little something different to more to work with, basically. So
I remember about 10 years ago, we were having some guests for the organization I was with, and from the Tarazzi studio, and they wanted, it's a piano studio at IUSB, and they wanted several comp tickets, and the director came to me and said, give them anything they want, because he said those are young people, they're college students, they'll go back and talk about it. He says they're full of energy and they will applaud like crazy. And it was. And I mean, at the particular concert, it was just amazing the energy that they brought in. Mm-hmm. And the sponsor likes it. You know, they're going, wow, this must be really good. And it was good. But I mean, the sponsor is happy that it shows a lot of people came. And the sponsor had no idea that I gave those tickets away.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming and visiting with us. We could probably, the grants and the foundations
grants,
and things like that.
That's
totally, I mean, that could be a whole new show, and maybe we'll do that at some time. But I'd like to thank Kristen for being with us today and filling us in. This has been great stuff. And I would also like to thank Rick Ellis for joining us for 3 shows in a row here at the Daily Grind. And I would like to thank the Daily Grind for letting us be here. And the Daily Grind in Elkhart, Indiana, 113 East Lexington Avenue. As Marcia is reminding me to say. And so come in here and have the best coffee and nosh in the world. Be sure to stop by the website at www.theatergeeks.com. Visit the store. There's a link to the store where you can buy all kinds of geek gear swag, if you will, such as T-shirts, hats, mugs,
Underwear?
Underwear.
Are there underwear now?
No, not yet. No. Maybe
bibs.
We will. Well, I don't know.
Baby bibs.
Maybe by the time this hits the feed, we will. Anyway, be sure to stop by there. Keep up with us. You can sign up for our newsletter at theatergeeks.com. That's all for episode 27. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaub.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.